We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man, here's the latest from Indianapolis. And I think this is a big one. And I just said to Mike, I don't know how he can't be cleared. But after practice today, Michael Penix was asked about when are you going to talk to your doctor? And his response was today. He's hoping to be cleared, but he will not question the doctor's decision. Meaning if the doc says, nah, you need a couple more weeks. He can't just say to hell with this. I'm playing. I want to be out there 11 on 11. I'm ready to go. Even if his mind is there medically, and the staff won't allow that either.
Right.
But, Mike, how could he not be cleared?
Well, again, we're not doctors. We're certainly not orthopedists. But he's looked really good. And we've talked about even this going back like 2 weeks ago. Where we've seen him doing what's part of his, you know, his rehab, presumably is to, when he's not throwing footballs, to sprint, and he looks great. I mean, you saw some of the footwork on some of the videos, albeit on 7-on-7 drills from Indy. But yeah, D-Led had it about Michael Penix Jr. talking to his doctor today, hoping to be cleared. And Mark Grimondi, Carl, went and did the math with the calendar from ESPN, said back on July 29th that he would be cleared in 4 weeks. 4 weeks from that date would be next Wednesday.
So D. Led said to us in our interview, if you missed it earlier today, it's online at odyssey.com, that his date was August 25th. That'd be 9 months from the injury. Either way, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, it's next week.
Right.
And the bottom line for us is, if you feel like that's enough time, and this is where we've been kind of talking about, okay, there's still time to figure this out. If you still want to consider the competition, if he gets cleared, just follow me. Not only does he play next week, he plays significant series, Mike, maybe two or more. You get a chance to evaluate. He's back to 11 on 11. And then you got two more weeks. Right. That's next week's preseason game. And you got two more weeks before the real season starts. I think that's enough time to say Michael Penix could start the season. But I do think it all depends on this timeline with the doctor today saying yay or nay.
Right. And as we know, Michael said, you heard the comments first from him himself to us in the press conference and then doing the podcast with Cam Newton about, like, don't press yourself and I'm not going to be able to do this till I feel 100%. But how do you feel 100% till you're out there taking some contact? Like Patrick Mahomes talked about it. You know, he needed to get out there and get some contact. He wanted to play preseason. Either way, it's some good news because, look, I'm sorry. All we get is, like, drips and drabs of video. One play doesn't tell the whole story. But that video that came out from yesterday's practice was just god-awful. With Tua, I mean, it's a scrimmage, and you're not a rookie. You know, that's something I expect from Cam Ward last year for Tennessee, Carl. You know how Tua looked yesterday.
Yeah.
And you could literally play, you know, like the Benny Hill theme or, you know, some cartoon music while he was running around and just eventually just throwing the ball into somebody's leg looked terrible.
Well, the good news is he looked significantly better according to reports today. The good news is Penix threw a pick today, but he also threw a touchdown in 7-on-7. Take it in stride, man. And again, I'm hoping that he gets cleared so we can get resolution. That's what we want as fans. We will not get that until he gets cleared. And even then, we may not get it until week 4 or 5, right? And you say, well, when you say resolution, I'm talking about who's the guy? I've been saying this. I do not want to go into this season rotating quarterbacks. Guy plays for 3 weeks, then you play another guy for 2 weeks, then another guy. That's just not a recipe.
Right. Remember that? We saw that with Ritter. They pulled Ritter, then Heinicke eventually got it, and eventually back to Ritter. That's, as John Madden famously said, if you got two quarterbacks, you don't have one. We've always said the best thing for this franchise is to at least know what the baseline is for once and for all with Michael Penix Jr. Is this the guy you're building it on, or are you moving on, you're going to draft a quarterback next year? And the only way that starts is by him getting out there. And I think Tua, if Tua's struggled with some of these things, I mean, that's on him. You know, if he's been, we always felt that he had the high road. He was on the high ground, I should say. And you got a great opportunity to reinvent yourself if you're Tua by really balling out. And we've always felt if he did do that, then maybe Mike wouldn't have a chance to get on the field. But right now, I think after what we're seeing from Tua, what we're hearing, I just want to see Michael Penix Jr. cleared. This quarterback battle has not been a battle, Carl.
No.
There's been nothing about this that's been a quarterback battle.
Mike, it's been, to be honest, it's been shenanigans.
Right.
It really has.
Not even a skirmish, as we said on social media. Right.
It's not been anything that you could really have solid footing on. But for me, I am just over every day trying to tell people he did this, he did that, and then the Penix people go nuts, and then the Tua people who don't like Tua go crazy. That's why I wanted it resolved on the field. That's what this was really all right. about. Performance is what it's about, right? Who outperforms who? And even with you say, okay, well, he did this in 7-on-7, and he did this in 11-on-11, I still want to see him in the preseason game. And we may get that opportunity in the third preseason game. All right. With that said, more coming out today, second day of practice. So, look, they got two good days. Tomorrow won't be like these last 2 days. They'll get their bodies ready. The guys that are going to play for Saturday. And then these guys will get, we're talking about the starters. We'll get somewhat of a rest. But I'm actually, and it's rare, I can't even remember, Mike, when I was looking forward to the third preseason game of any preseason. Because I actually am looking forward to next week. It'll be Friday. Right. And seeing if all of this actually plays out. And then you can make a judgment.
Right. Now, the other debate is when you do 11 on 11 in your own practice facility at Flowery Branch, and you got Mike Vick and a real baseline. And then you can see, okay, here's Tua. Now, and then there's Penix. And then how do they look? And who's making the plays? And who's showing this coaching staff they understand what they're trying to do?
Yeah.
But then the other part is, has Michael been able to – we've only seen – we haven't really seen him doing a lot of play action because we've only seen him really doing the seven – those seven-on-seven
correct
throws. But
which is mostly a shotgun.
Right. Things we haven't seen. Michael Penix under center. The footwork, which seemed to be an issue last year. I mean, the way the plays – I said to you earlier, it just looked like so slow how those play act – even in the pistol, it would be like, oh, man, you got a rookie quarterback with his back to the field for almost a full half second or whatever. It just looked awkward. So hopefully he's going to get the coaching. But, yeah, man, give me some as a fan. Because all that stuff I said earlier this week about a gap year, if I know that Michael Penix Jr. is starting from the jump and we're not going to do the multiple quarterback thing, that changes my perception a little bit.
Could still be a gap year, though.
Well, you still got a lot of problems on defense.
Yes,
you're missing a lot of pieces on defense. And everyone just goes, yes, Penix grasped this offense and away we go. Yeah, that's what we're hoping for, guys. You think we want to go 9 years without the freaking playoffs? But, I mean, he's got to do that. First things first, though, is this milestone with the doctors.
All right. As far as why the offense has looked not as crisp, it's something that I'm curious about. And I said, is this Tommy Reese? Is it play calling? These check downs? We got to stretch the field, man. And that's something, whether it's Penix or Tua. And again, we weren't there today to visually see a lot of this, but when you say the offense looks better, that means completions. That means moving the ball, right? There's more fluidity to it. But that's something that concerned me a little bit, Mike, because you go from the first preseason game where you looked as bad as you did, then you get to that first practice yesterday and it didn't look good as a whole. I'm talking about the offensive unit.
Right.
That's something I wanted them to respond to today, and I think they did.
And for guys hitting us up in the text line, well, what do you care about a scrimmage? Because you're not going to see these guys Saturday. Mm-mm. This is all we got to go on. And sometimes the coaches feel they get more out of this than they actually will in the preseason game. Controlled environment for what they're trying to do at 11-on-11. As Coach said earlier week, we'll be good guests. I guess there's no brawls. From what we heard,
no.
Unless the NFL dropped the hammer and said, guys, stop with the monkey business after what happened out there with the Cowboys and everybody else. Daniel Flick, as you said, talking about, he'll be on a show tomorrow, right, Day-Day, from AJC? Is that a Big Ten 4? Okay. Either way, he's up there at practice to tell us what he saw about it. And then you've got Daniel Flick saying, and I mentioned this to you earlier, I just saw this as a blurb in the NFL Network, that Trey Sermon apparently got injured, is now on the IR. So a young man who's kind of bounced around the league and had such high hopes, first in Ohio State, then Oklahoma, local kid. So the good news is he'll get a settlement, but unfortunately he's not going to be able to play this year.
Yeah, and that sucks simply because he was in here, getting extra reps with Brian Robinson. And you might, you can never have enough running backs. Like, that's just what it is. I don't want to run Bijan into the ground, but you need other guys. And I thought that was a nice little pickup, but unfortunately he's not going to be able to help. The deal that where we're at right now, and what I think Falcon fans need to understand, is Dukes and Bale Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. He's going to talk to his doctor. We're talking about Penix, but it doesn't mean he's going to get cleared. But at least we have a date, and we didn't have that weeks ago. We asked Michael Penix at camp, hey, when's your next doctor's appointment? I don't know.
He said that, his own words. That's what everybody, literally, Data, you were there. Everybody in the media room were like, what?
So
really?
It doesn't mean he's going to get cleared.
But yeah.
But it's a checkpoint.
I just really want Michael Penix Jr. to show us what we got, one way or the other. See how he evolves in this offense from the jump with real professional coaching. Not that Zach Robinson clown show last year.
Yeah.
Where guys are getting, oh, maybe I should be on the sideline. Maybe I shouldn't be in the booth. And then your passing game coordinator gets fired. I mean, it really was dysfunction. And that's why I feel bad that Mike, lost, 2 years of getting better coaching, to be having better prepared for this moment.
The coaching helps. Him being healthy helps even more. And that's the part that no coach can fix. These 2 seasons that have been lost, Mike, due to injury since he's become a pro, look, he could have had Vince Lombardi. It wouldn't have mattered.
Right.
You got to be out there. And so we'll see how that all shakes out. I'm sure we'll hear some news tomorrow, hopefully out of Indy, maybe tonight, about that. But when it's all said and done, I think this opens the door to that window we've been talking about where you say, okay, how long until we start the season? And is that enough time to do a real evaluation, play him in the preseason, the third preseason game, and feel good about this? And then we go from the jump. We start the season with the guy that you thought you were going to start the season with, because when this injury happened, we said, oh, he'll be ready for next year. And then as we went through the offseason, it was, well, he might not be ready for camp. He might not be ready for OTAs. Even though he was there, he wasn't a full go.
Hey, man, how about this? Day-Day, Oren, Carl, if he is named week one starter at Pittsburgh, we all wear do-rags on the show?
Well, I wear a do-rag every night, so that doesn't matter.
Well, can you lend me one?
Yeah, I got too much hair for a do-rag.
My curls are already tight, so I'm good to go, man.
It's fine.
But yeah. But I hear you.
Might be my new style. I'll get thin in the back again.
In support of him doing well, because that's what this is all about, man. And that's the part where I just, Mike, I'm fed up to hear with the whole criticism of both guys. Either way, we got to figure this out. We got to figure it out, you know? And the part of this is you're seeing bad performances, like the first preseason game. It just gave you no reason to believe that there was promise at the end of the run. Like, where's this going?
And for guys and ladies who missed the beginning of the show, we talked about, you know, Brandon Dorlus was quoted, I think Josh Kendall had it, as saying, yeah, we were embarrassed. They were all embarrassed. They looked at the tape because, remember, it wasn't like your full, like, regular starting 11. There were guys that were backups. There were some guys that didn't play the whole game. Obviously, it was just a series for some. But they were embarrassed. So that did matter. So the defense apparently did a great job against the run yesterday, and maybe today a better job against the pass, against Daniel Jones.
Yeah. Let's hope so, man. All right, more on that coming up. But we got to talk about the Braves, who actually got it today. They put it together offensively. They got a good pitching performance from Grant Holmes. We'll talk to Grant McCauley about it. If you want tickets to go see the Braves, stay tuned. We'll give you that opportunity between now and 6 o'clock. We got tickets to the Rockies game on Sunday, August 30th at Truist Park. A Georgia Lottery gift bag also, guys. Prizes are provided by the Georgia Lottery. Today could be the day. What a performance, Grant, should I say, by Grant Holmes. We're talking to Grant McCauley, who took a no-hitter into the seventh inning. This is a guy that I've questioned, and I've been saying, all right, what are we going to do in this rotation? Smith-Sharver, what's the deal? But it starts like this to go, okay, makes you want to believe that Grant Holmes is going to be a part of this playoff rotation, Grant.
Well, of all the things you need, you do not need me in your playoff rotation. I'll tell you that. You want to do the rotation for updates on the team and discussions like we do every day, I'm absolutely there for it. I'll be your ace. But, yeah, Grant Holmes has really, I think, been kind of a really weird overall look at what his season has been. And I say that meaning, like, everybody kind of looks at him as maybe being a weak link or a guy that doesn't come out and give you quality. But I'm just looking at this. He's made 25 appearances this year. 24 of those have been starts. He has allowed more than three runs exactly twice. Once in Coors Field, and the other time was his last time out when he got knocked around by the Arizona Diamondbacks. But overall, this is a guy that continues to take the ball, go out there. He doesn't give you, I think, the innings that you would like sometimes, and that is a fair complaint, and sure, it's a fair adjustment that the Braves have, you know, tried to make with their rotation or with the bullpen having to pick up some of those innings. But by and large, he's been far more good than bad, and I think that kind of gets lost on days that maybe the Braves don't hit a lot. And it's, you do look at Grant Holmes, and you're like, well, there's three runs he gave up, and that's cost you the game. But that's a very, very, you know, difficult needle to thread, if you will, for a starting pitcher. But the game like today does remind you that this is a guy that is capable of going out there and giving you a competitive start. You needed that. You certainly need a lot more from the offense. I'm sure we'll talk about that. But between Grant Holmes with 6-1 hit innings and the bullpen coming in and going 9-up, 9-down and punching out 7 guys, I mean, this was the kind of pitching performance that can end the losing streak, and it's just what the Braves needed.
Yeah, man, stop the bleeding after getting swept up there in Minnesota. General Custer did a hell of a job. We'll give him credit. I think Grant Holmes did it. By the way, what is your repertoire for playing a wiffle ball? You throwing a sinker? What do you got, knuckleball?
I don't know. I mean, I think you can pretty much just make up pitches on the spot. That was kind of the fun of wiffle ball, right?
Right.
I mean, the last one didn't work. Just cover a couple of different spots and see how the ball moves the next time.
We used to play so much wiffle ball in the driveway. Anyway, Grant's with us here, guys. Talk about the Bravos. Austin Riley provides all the RBIs you need. He had knocks in both of them.
Yep. He's continued to make some contributions since the All-Star break that, you know, just continue to show that there are some signs there of him being able to give you a little bit more, obviously, than you were getting. And that's really what you're asking for, right? With some, you know, being able to show some progress and to show that he can, you know, come through in times where you need him. And this was just an example where Austin was the only guy that was able to come through on a day like today. But two was enough, and Austin Riley continues to hit well since the break. So I would say, by and large, if he can continue to just kind of stack good at-bats, good series together, and close this season and get hot at the right time, then the Braves will be happy about how he's finishing things out and not so much dwelling on how the first 3 months of the year went.
Do you think Walt is going to be a little bit more careful with how much he runs out Raisel Iglesias? He was on a 1-2-3 ninth inning today for another save. I'm just curious, do you think that's top of mind for him?
I think it should be, and it's kind of part of the calculus, right? I mean, anytime he said that we have a chance to win a game, I'm going to use our guys, and we're going to try to win that game. And I do understand that. And you saw that in Minnesota, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the offense was not clicking, but he was looking at the opportunity to get his high-leverage guys in there and try to close out a game and keep the game right where it is and hope that they could score the runs to win it. It just doesn't always work out that way. But I think Didier Fuentes has had to throw quite a bit here, especially in the second half and here lately. Dylan Lee, a lot's been asked of him all season long, and the same thing for Raisel. But maybe this being able to kind of, you know, with no save situations, kind of stay away from him for a minute and allow him to reset a little bit, that could help out. But you'd like to see more save situations and have more difficult decisions to make about when you're using Raisel. And today, he was certainly on his game.
All right, Grant, we've talked about you're going to have ups and downs over the course of the year. The bats went cold up in Minnesota, but now we really get to see, you know, White Sox technically are division leaders, Milwaukee. And I know we've joked around about, do these guys, Tony Gwynn Jr. agrees with me that they've never shown the ability to punch through. I mentioned Danny Ozark's Phillies in the 70s. That's what the Brewers are to me. Just dated myself. But how tough is this going to be? And we're going to get one hell of a pitching battle this weekend.
Yeah, you're definitely going to get it in game one. It's going to be Chris Sale and Jacob Mizorowski. That's exactly what I think, Carl, you were asking about yesterday. Yeah. Are we going to see him? Yep, we're going to see him, and we're going to get the two aces going at each other. And that, I think, will set the tone for this series. I think it will be a lot about the pitching. The Brewers, to me, are a team that, yes, they may have had some October difficulties, but this is a club that knows how to win, has the pitching stacked up, and continues to have one of the best records in all of Major League Baseball. So the path to your postseason fate and not having to play in that wild card is going to run through Milwaukee for three games, and then you're going to come home and have to run through the LA Dodgers. So this is going to be a very, very challenging, you know, 6-7 days for the Atlanta Braves to get through that and see where they are on the other side. But I do think this Brewers team is one that, I mean, again, they may not have won the big one, and it may be a difficulty that they find in October, but they will give you all you could possibly want when it comes to the regular season. The Braves did take a series from them earlier. If they could do it again, that would be very well-timed and have you kind of back on the right footing after that misstep in Minnesota and a series that very much was forgettable for the Braves for a number of reasons.
Miz has 50 more strikeouts than Chris Sale, who's been great this year. What makes him so effective? This is an afternoon game, by the way, tomorrow, late afternoon. What makes him so effective in your opinion, Grant?
I mean, this is an overpowering power pitcher. It's not just a guy that throws hard. This is a guy that he can throw 104, 105 miles an hour. He throws more 100-mile-an-hour pitches in games than some guys throw in their entire career or all season long. And he just continues to overwhelm you with that. And if that doesn't work, he'll go to his secondary stuff and his breaking pitches, which are just absolutely filthy as well. So when you've got that mix and you've got the heat that has just that extra degree, which his certainly does, you're going to be hard to hit, especially when you have the command. And that's what sets him apart, right? It's not just, hey, I throw hard.
Yep.
It's I throw hard, I put it exactly where I want to, and then I can get you to expand your zone and swing and miss more because you're trying to tune up to hit that fastball up in the zone, or really anywhere in the zone he puts it, is going to be hard to hit.
Right.
And then he can change your eye level. And Jacob Mizorowski is on his way, I think, to a Cy Young Award this season.
Not to turn you into Dr. James Andrews or anybody who does these surgeries, but, you know, Skeens' velocity came down. In today's Major League Baseball with the wear and tear, is it still viable for a guy like Mizorowski to keep that at that pace?
Yeah, I don't know. Has anybody done it at this side of Nolan Ryan? I'm not sure.
Right.
I mean, Tom Seaver pitched for a long time. Nolan Ryan did, but we're also talking about a bygone era of pitchers, because you're not asking any of these guys to go out there and throw 8 or 9 innings every single time and start 40 games. So this is a different era of baseball than, you know, you grew up on, I grew up on, or even the one we were watching 15 years ago. The complete game has died a death. So it's really max effort for six innings, seven innings, and then turn it over to a bullpen, which is, let me check my notes, yep, max effort for as many pitches as they can throw, and that's just kind of how this game is won these days. So a lot of focus is now on velocity. Clearly, when you've got the kind of repertoire that we just talked about with Mizorowski, it's velocity and then some. But, yeah, I'm fascinated to see how he evolves over time. This was a conversation I had with John Smoltz a couple of years ago when Spencer Strider was at his peak. Smoltz said, yep, I see what he does. I think he's just an absolutely terrific strikeout pitcher. I want to see how he evolves. And as we know, injury, unfortunately, can derail the path of many a promising pitcher. And we'll see what it is for Mizorowski. But as of right now, it's hard to look around and find a better pitcher on planet Earth than that guy when he's got it going.
Left field, just real quick, platoon, even as we get into the playoffs, that's what it looks like, right? That's what we've been doing. And does that concern you at all? No?
Not really. I think that the biggest thing that I look at with those guys in left field is, you know, with Mike Yastrzemski, he hasn't had the kind of year that you've wanted him to have, I don't think. But on the flip side, I think that Lane Thomas can do a lot of things that could make things better for the Braves by having somebody else who can just give them that righty-lefty matchup. And then it frees up Mauricio Dubon to solve the other problem, which, of course, is shortstop.
Right.
They've got to sort that out. To me, and we talked about that some yesterday, it's, you know, I'm not saying Ha-Sung Kim is the answer, but I'm also not going to sit here and tell you can just keep running Jim Jarvis out there for unlimited at-bats. So I would be interested to see if you stop running Mauricio Dubon out in left field, plug him in at shortstop, maybe what those two guys could do with a little bit more regular at-bats, particularly in the case of Lane Thomas.
Okay, I've asked you about, you know, not that there is friction between the front office and Walt Weiss, but you think Walt Weiss just wants to be over this whole Kim situation?
I don't know that that's the case. I think Walt's a pretty, I think, understanding manager in terms of how hard this game is. I mean, you go look at Walt Weiss and his career. I mean, he's the guy that came up, played for a great team in the Oakland Athletics. He was never the star there. He won the Rookie of the Year in 1988, but there were a lot of ups and downs in his career, a lot of injuries in his career, a lot of lost time in those seasons. I mean, you'll find Walt hitting 220 some years with very little power, and he wasn't a big stolen base guy either. It was just kind of a glove-first shortstop, but have glove will travel, kind of, because he bounced around. He went to the Marlins. He went to the Rockies. He ended up with the Braves. But, you know, I think he understands the travails of what a major league career is and what injuries can do to you and what lost time can do. And I think with that understanding, you know, in one hand, it helps you manage the person, but if you're managing the team, I think that you kind of have to be a little bit more pragmatic and say, all right, who's giving us the best chance to win? That's the guy I'm going to go with. I think that we've kind of reached that point where you want to give guys as much opportunity as you can, and I'm saying this in the case of Jim Jarvis, but maybe if we're looking at the shortstop spot realistically, it's Mauricio Dubon's job. And if you want to mix in Kim at some point and figure out if there's anything to be had there, then I guess you can. But right now the Braves are so busy trying to win games, I just don't think they can afford to experiment, and that may be what we're seeing with Kim.
That's a good point. Grant, great stuff, man. We'll see what happens. Great pitching matchup tomorrow, and hopefully we can handle business against Milwaukee. It'd be nice to win this series. I think it'd give the Braves fans a lot of confidence against a really good club during this tough stretch. We will talk tomorrow, my friend. Thanks again.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Cool. All right, guys, you want tickets? We got a family four-pack to go check out the Braves and the Rockies on August 30th at Truist Park, and a Georgia Lottery gift bag. Yeah, both things. Prizes are provided by the Georgia Lottery. Today could be the day. 404-726-0929. Let's go caller number 9. Caller 9, Day-Day. Good luck. All right. Thanks for listening to Atlanta's number one sports station, its number one sports show. We're coming back. We got more to get to. What happened at practice today? If you're just tuning in, stay there.
Doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of we need yous. Talking about Michael Penix Jr., and the word is talking to his doctor. And now, immediately guys on social media go, who's doctor? The doctor? A doctor? No, man. I mean, you know, they call Dr. Kildare in from a hospital. I presume it's somebody who's been working with him. But the story that was breaking today up in Indianapolis after practice is Michael Penix Jr. meeting with a doctor. And if it's 9 months to the day, then it's going to be the 25th, maybe sooner. But we're trying to get that all clear, and that is the big story, because as we've talked about all offseason long, and there's a big write-up today about everybody's quarterback situation around the NFL, is, yes, the ideal situation is Penix to establish that he is the man, to make it an easy decision for the Falcons in May to pick up his fifth-year option, because that's the deadline for that, and then we're in business. And then if they want to go find a viable backup, that's the case. But Tua, and if Tua had balled out and really secured the position, Carl, then we could always have tagged him if that's the case. I just think we're going to see Penix sooner than later.
Well, either way, I want to know what gives you full belief that whoever is going to be gives this team a real chance to win. And, you know, this idea that Penix jumps in there and this team takes off, that is the ideal situation. But it may not happen that way. Like, that may not be the way this plays out. So, you know, again, as late as we are in this whole camp conversation, we're still really early in the season. We've not played a real game. They've not been, you know, defeated three or four times, and we're not on some losing streak. There's still time to figure this out. But I just want to know, Mike, who has, as far as the offense is concerned, right, who has picked this up? It's been a new system for both guys. Tua said, I'm still learning, and I feel like we're getting better every day. The reports today was he was better. Penix did his 7-on-7. But who has a real grasp of what they're wanting to do offensively? Right. And I, look, there are still things I think the coaching staff are like, okay, we have time to figure this out. And then you go from there. But I will say this. If Penix does start the season, and that would be great, does he hold on to this job?
Well, that's the other side of the equation. I mean, for all the guys out there, it's basically the two camps, obviously, Tua or Penix. Amazing support for Jack Stratt. He'll be in the second half. Everybody loves the backup. Big fella, the big galoot will be in there in the second half on Saturday night. Starters aren't going to play. But I'm with you. I mean, what if...
And I'm not being negative.
But if you want to have a logical, fact-based conversation... You know, it can go one. I'm not saying two things can be true. One of two things can happen. It can go bad, yes, or it can go really well.
Yeah.
You know, but the thing is, you can, and this is not hating, so don't start crying, you softies out, freaking softies out there, bro. But anyway, Carl, it's, you could really use the 11-on-11 experience of having the Colts defense presenting looks at you,
yes,
in the scrimmage for Michael Penix to help Stefanski and co evaluate him. But he couldn't do that.
No.
He's 7-on-7, where apparently he was some good and some bad.
All right, and overall, the defense played better today, which was great. I thought they did, you know, yesterday the reports were they didn't do well against the run. We heard those things, and today I think they did a lot better job. But that's what this is for, man. You're not going to be great every day. That's why you practice, and that's why you try to put it all together. And, you know, this whole phrase, Mike, we're stacking days, is real.
Right.
That you're trying to stack days so that, man, we can be consistent. And you know what? We can show up and make these plays that we need to make. But I thought both guys had moments here over the last couple of days. I just feel like Tua's getting more recognition because he's the presumed starter, and he is participating in 11-on-11, which means he's getting reps that Michael Penix isn't.
Right.
If Penix was getting that, then we could focus more on him. But we haven't been able to do that. And so that's part of this discussion as well. Guy hit me up. I love it. He goes, man, Tua is still blank. And I said, well, he beat us last year.
That's true.
So for whatever you think, man, like, and we asked him about that whole, you know, well, you remember last year coming in here? And he was like, man, any given Sunday, there is something to that. A quarterback who you don't think is any good or is going through a tough stretch can all of a sudden look like a superstar, right, in this league. Everybody's got ability. But can you put it together and be consistent? And that's what we're waiting for from Michael Penix.
Right.
Really, that's the conversation, guys. He's got the ability. And I asked Mike earlier in the show, I said, do you believe that you know, when you look at him, is he that guy? And you said, I think he has potential. I think he's a good quarterback. I just don't know if he's going to be great.
Right.
And that is the one thing where you can say, well, yeah, he can make all the throws. But there's a lot of guys that come through this league that can make all the throws.
Right. I mean, if ever I thought there was a guy that was going to be a solid number one, I'm perennial Pro Bowler, no doubt, it was Trevor Lawrence. And it's taken him a while.
You're right.
You know, it's and again, some of this goes back to what I said about Michael Penix Jr. earlier. It's not that Zach Robinson can't coach football, but he wasn't the right qualified guy to work with a rookie. And that's why they had to take forever to get him on the field the first year that Cousins started wobbling. Right, so Zach may be fine and in tune with Baker running that Rams playbook, but you didn't help. What did you do with him? Did you develop his play action ability? You know, and did you press him into stuff that he wasn't comfortable with? I don't think that was the case.
Okay, so do you remember? I know you do. When we had on what was it, the Raheem cut, Big O, where he said you do what guys are good at.
Yeah, I said, why don't we do more play action? Why isn't he under center? Specifically, we spent all last year. Why isn't Michael Penix Jr. under center more?
And I only bring that up to say, was Raheem wrong? Is this something that he may not just be good at? Now, he's denied that. We're talking about Michael Penix. He's denied that and said, I'll do whatever they want me to do. And then you go, well, then why did they ask you to do more of it?
Right.
But that gets back to, was the former coach lying about that?
Well, again, I mean, you brought a coach in that, you know, by the third week, the worst game that Michael Penix played, I need to be on the sideline. Well, you know, you probably should have started Michael Penix in the preseason. We've covered this. There were so many things that were wrong in how Raheem approached this.
By the way, do you know, I don't know if we've said this, Coach has said Reese is going to be up in the booth.
Right.
He said that.
Right. That's where he is. Well, I mean, you will have Stefanski and Alex down there on the sideline. And Stefanski is a de facto OC, who I presume we'll work with. We're going to fight again, and we'll see how he runs it. But that's the thing, going back to, you know, to Penix, you know, they fired a guy that was on the offensive staff 3 weeks into the season in a total, like, scapegoat mode, and apparently guys got disrespected, and instead of just letting things cool down, he was firing guys. You know, just the whole thing is just, guys, that's a blank show. Okay, that's like right now Bill Belichick in North Carolina. It's a crap show.
Yeah, it's a lot going on.
You know, Kurt's comfortable up in the center.
And
that's what you do. You do what the quarterback can do.
That comment made us wonder, well, then does that mean that Michael Penix is not comfortable?
Right.
And look.
By inference, other guy wouldn't do it.
That's right.
Because he wasn't comfortable.
And so those are things that we'll figure out along the way. Here's a couple of tidbits for you guys. Falcons starting offense today scored a touchdown on his first drive in the red zone. Tua connects with Alamide Zaccheaus. He makes a catch over the middle. O-line held up. Those are the kind of things we want to hear out of these practices. Penix also on the first play in red zone, 7-on-7, throws a pass to Bijan for a touchdown. Great. Those are the things that we want to hear. And then he throws an interception. And I said on Twitter, where's the outrage? Because it's fake. You guys are either for or against one of the other guys, and you go off when one guy does well, and you kill the other guy when he doesn't. We just want the best situation for our team, whatever that's going to be. And if it's Michael Penix, I'll cheer like hell. But if it's Tua, I'll cheer like hell for him to make the right plays and lead us to victory. What's up, O?
No, as crazy as bad as Tua had a day yesterday, Penix's day wasn't great yesterday either.
Really?
It's completely overshadowed by the fact of what happened to Tua.
The interception.
But you read the tweets and stuff about, like, ball placement wasn't great yesterday for Mike. The 7-on-7 was a bit uneven, so
you're right.
It wasn't great for him yesterday either, but Tua throws one pick, he has one fumble, and all of a sudden the narrative changes. Nobody talks about what happened with Penix at all yesterday.
Well, that's probably also, too, due to the fact that no one's expecting Penix to win the job.
Right.
Everyone right now is expecting Tua to win the job.
Yeah, but it's also because
he's not cleared.
But the media's not watching 7-on-7. They're watching the 11-on-11.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
That's a byproduct of this situation.
Yeah.
And the other thing, look, everybody's had a blooper moment in their NFL career. It's just that video that I retweeted it, and D-Leg goes, not a good look yesterday, where Tua literally, you know what it looks like? It almost looks like when Jameis gets his boys in the backyard
and
Jameis Winston is doing one of those like drills. It's just like, Tua looked like a chicken with his head cut off, and he's running left, he's running right, and then he throws it into somebody's leg. It's like, what? That's what everybody around the country is seeing.
Yeah.
And as are our listeners.
It's interesting. All right, here's the deal. Friday could be a good day, and I love Falcon fans. They better clear him.
Well,
okay.
Yeah,
what's he going to do? You going to hold a knife to the doctor's throat? What are you saying? Come on.
It's almost like,
you better clear him.
You know, the doctor is supposed to be objective, you know, like it used to be with, you know, the Fed or the attorney general. It's supposed to be objective, Carl. So we're going to see how this doctor rules on this. And hopefully that will be the news we're going to get. And everything's on pace. And Stefanski and Matt Ryan and Ian knew this all along. And we were chickens with our heads cut off, rolling around in this for like 2 months.
But here's my question, though. If the doctor already told him his knee is good and he's got this $1 million.
Won't ever have another problem.
So if the doctor's already told him that, then what exactly is being cleared?
His ability to go full bore.
Yeah. Okay.
That's so his ability to do
contact,
everything.
Perception correct.
Yeah. You know what's crazy, y'all? The Falcons posted a video of Tua throwing a touchdown to Drake in that like red zone drill or whatever.
Yeah.
And you start reading the comments, nothing about, oh, great. It's horrible throw. Threw behind him. Horrible throw. Bad pass. It's literally just bad pass.
Look.
Nothing positive about it.
I said it. Holler at your boy. Penix is these guys. They will accept nothing other than Penix Jr.
Yeah.
You know, and the agendas vary, but that's their guy. And now we'll hopefully get a chance to see sooner or later. Because the last thing I wanted, and any fan, the idea of going through multiple quarterbacks in one season, because that is a recipe for garbage.
It's a disaster.
Unless you're Alex Smith being spelled by Colin Kaepernick and you go all the way to the Super Bowl. It rarely happens. Or Phil Sims when Hostetler came in, right?
That's true.
Or Bob Greasy for Earl Morrill. And then back to Greasy. And I know some Dolphin fans are still wanting a little more Earl Morrill in there. But it rarely happens, is the point.
Yeah. It's literally just bad throw. Didn't lead him, behind him. Bad throw.
I saw the one. Drake saved his ass.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Well, Drake did come. You know, it's the kind of stuff that Julio would do, kind of whoop. You know, remember that play where Julio took it and ran? You know, that was awesome.
He went
awesome.
Over the top of Luke Kuechly.
This is the one from today.
On a live drive. Yeah.
Those things happen. Guess what? That's what playmakers do.
Right.
Quarterbacks aren't going to be perfect every single time. You need guys that can make plays like that. But to your point, though, that is the bias that we're talking about. And I'm ready to be done with that. Let's get to making a decision and figuring this out. And then, by the way, here's the funny thing, Mike. If it's not the decision they want, they're not going to accept it.
Right.
That was a bad pass by Tua, but 6 points is 6 points. Lock in.
The comments.
All right, man. It's coming.
Hey, man.
It's coming. Now, again, please, doctor, please.
They better clear it.
You know, I mean, come on.
Okay.
As we said, guys ask us every freaking day. I ran into this guy, Lamar, who works for Georgia Crown. I was at Publix in Tyrone this week. He said, how's he look? I go, he looks fine. Yeah. He looks ready to go from my untrained eye. Right? You said the same thing.
Yeah, I don't have any reason to doubt that he can do the things he needs to do. All right, we'll figure that out tomorrow. Big Friday show, man. Make sure you're here. A bunch of football guests as well, as we will head towards another weekend of a bunch of preseason games, learning more about all the teams around the league. More on college football as we're counting down, guys. Next Saturday, not this Saturday, next Saturday, we get real college football. And then it is on a bunch of games leading into Labor Day.
Yeah.
So we're here. All right, well, Chris is coming up. He's got a short show because we got Corky Kell tonight. It will start around 7:20-ish, 7:30 or so. So Decatur and Blessed Trinity is right. That's who it is tonight. And so stay tuned for that. But Chris has got a short show. He'll pick things up here.
Day. 41.5 over under.
We don't do that. Stop it.
What?
Did you stop it?
Let's get out of here, man, and clear our throat. Oh. Hey, thanks to all of our guests today. D-Led joined us. He had some interesting things to say as he helped us break down yesterday's practice. Tomorrow, buddy Daniel Flick's going to stop by from the AJC to help us break down what he saw today, and maybe we get some news. Make sure you're here at 2 tomorrow. Big O behind the glass, great job as always. Day-Day executive producing, and thank you guys for making us a part of your day. We appreciate it here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Mike Bell, clear your throat.
Hey, man, the joint practice phenomenon has always been around the NFL, but it really has clicked into high gear when they went to a three-game preseason. Coaches want to have more opportunity to have some real game scenarios, and that's why you have them. But the Cowboys and Saints, he was swinging on cuz. The NFL drops a $500,000 fine for both teams in practice. That seems a bit much. I guess they're trying to send the message. Saquon Barkley was asked, how do you like joint practice? He goes, I hate joint practices. Because people start shoving, egos get involved, and we spend half the time separating guys. So I don't think it's going to go away, but the NFL is definitely watching them closely.
Can you imagine if he was a killer? I mean, really, how many rings would he have? I'm talking about James Harden, who just signed another three-year, $97 million extension to stay with the Cavaliers. Guys, he's second all-time in career three-point field goal percentage. Field goals made. He enters the season number 9 on the NBA's career point list. We know LeBron took that from Kareem. What I'm telling you is he's always been able to score. But his desire to put teams away in the playoffs when it matters most and be a killer has never been there. I don't know if there's another player who stole more money in the NBA than James Harden.
Here, here.
If you love the show,
tell your friends.
If you don't,
you ordered Carl a Harden jersey.